Let me start by just repeating, I think Nedra summed up one of the very important principles of persuasive technology, that it doesn't always work, and it's not very effective when it doesn't work. So hopefully we've gotten through most of the issues. It sounds like there's a few more people who are still calling in. Tanya or Diana, do you believe that there are enough people online that I can start? Because I heard the phone still ringing a little bit.
Please go ahead, Brian. It's all gone.
Okay. Okay, great. So let me start. I'm going to point out a couple of things on the front page. This course, I've designed it to try and make it as practical, scientifically based, and easy. And it's taken me a few years to come up with a format that fits this. So let's start. And I'll give you an overview of the presentation. We've lost a bit of time, so I'm going to have to speed through this a little quicker. But we're going to start up here, just talking about what the course is about. We're going to go through who it's for and what they can expect to learn. I'll talk about some of the resources. I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. And then what we're going to do is go on a tour of the system and the curriculum. So I'll give you a very broad overview, and then at the end there's some space for questions or discussion. So what is this course about? Quite simply, this is a course on designing health behavior change technologies and campaigns. So what do I mean? Here are a couple of examples. So these are different technologies, most of them web or mobile, that are designed to try and influence how we think and behave in regards to health. So here's one thing. It's pretty simple. This is a push-up app. It's a great little mobile application that you can use to try and increase your number of push-ups. It comes with goal setting, and it coaches you along, and it gives you a great recipe that will show you how to achieve something you might not otherwise be able to achieve on your own. So this little app replicates to some degree what a coach does. Here we have one of my favorite online interventions called SICK, which goes against convention and encourages people to achieve a goal such as quitting smoking. Not so much with carrots, but more with sticks. So they make you wager something that's going to be very harmful and unpleasant for you to accept coming through. So if you don't achieve your goal, you might like lose money or give your money to an organization you just can't stomach. Here's another example of a health behavior change technology. This comes from Evolution Health. So it's one of the great companies in Toronto that has been designing online health behavior change technologies for about a decade. And this is a screener. People put in information about their drinking habits, and this provides them information and puts pressure on them to change their drinking habits. And, of course, we have the popular Fitbit with an accelerometer that uploads data into a website and lets you monitor your activity and can encourage you to actually walk more and do a few things for your physical fitness that are going to be much better if you can keep up to it. And with this technology, it will show you where you're at and push you to go that extra mile. So these are a couple of examples. So who will this course benefit? Well, designed this for communications specialists, a bit more for e-marketers or e-health marketers or community managers, so anyone who's working sort of frontline promoting health behavior change or awareness. Then we can have anyone who's working in the field of health but doing specifically graphic design work or web development. The system is very good for researchers who want to study interactive technologies within the area of health or other fields, and any health technology developers. Sorry, just one thing. When I uploaded the slide into Adobe Connect, some of the titles and sizes shifted, so a couple of them are a bit hard to see, but I'll just explain them as we go on. These are some of the learning objectives that I set for this course. And I've divided them into what you'll know, so this will be education, and then skills, so what you'll be able to do. So for starters, I'm going to be educating you on some of the key behavior change theories, which can be used in technology. We're going to be looking at about over 40 persuasive design principles, and I'm going to show you how these principles apply in digital technology. These are universal principles. You can apply them in all sorts of media, but we're going to be looking at how they apply online. We're going to try and crack open a couple of these technologies and campaigns, tear them apart, and I'm going to show you how their guts work in terms of persuasive design. And we'll also look at how research is used to optimize the performance technology. Now, skills that we're going to be focusing on are being able to apply behavior change science. So I'm going to give you some basic resources that you can use. Take back to your office, look at what you're doing, and then move down to the next bullet here, which is then to critically assess and look for opportunities.
Hi, Brian. It's Tanya. I just have a few technical questions. One is, we have someone who cannot see the slides change.
Oh, okay. I'm on slide 6 right now.
6.
Can everyone see slide 6?
The person who sent me the message, if you still cannot see slide 6, we'll address that. And she, great. Okay, and then we have from Daniel as well, who's raised his hand.
Okay, Oh, can people manually switch slides?
No, the slides are being switched by the system itself.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to say what slide we're on. So if people can't follow the screen based on my presentation, then they should be able to follow along just manually. So if we can't do this, let us know in the chat box. Does that sound like a reasonable solution, Tanya?
The slides are only viewable on the computer screen. We don't have them down. They were not received as a file. Maybe continue, and I'm helping this person address the issue.
Okay. Okay, great. So we're still on slide 6. And so for the skills that you're going to be able to develop, one would be to go out and take a look at what you consider to be a great model. Like you think this is the type of campaign or this is the type of technology that we believe will be useful for our work. And then with the system, you'll be able to go out to critically assess it, identify a lot of the core ingredients, and figure out which of those core ingredients create, like, you know, the persuasive architecture for that technology. You know, what if this was cooking, what are, you know, the 5 ingredients that just make that dish delicious? Or in the case of health behavior change technology, help it achieve its impact. And so once you can identify that, you can use it in your own work to design your own system. And now I'm moving on to slide 7. So I'm going to be sharing a couple of exclusive resources during this training. And this includes a persuasive design toolkit. And primarily this comprises of a checklist of over 40 persuasive design principles that I extracted, and I started doing this work during my doctorate, where I spent 2 years analyzing the ingredients of health behavior change technologies. And this work I published in the Journal of Medical Internet Research, and it was in the form of a meta-analysis where I didn't just identify them, but I actually quantified and measured which ingredients worked and how effective they were. Since this time, I've boiled down the list, and I'm going to show you how we package it, but you're going to have a great, useful checklist that you can go audit your technologies and apply. I created an exercise book for the course, so we're going to show you examples, and you're going to go through and mark them up. So it'll be very hands-on, and I found that that's one of the best ways to learn these principles. Of course, all the slides used in the training. I'm going to bring in these oversized printouts of different websites, mobile apps, and we're going to use those for working hands-on to understand how these technologies work. And, of course, a couple of generic wireframes so you can get a sense of each system. Okay, so now we're moving on to slide 9. So here I have a couple of pictures. For the hands-on coding exercises, we learn principles, and then we go out and we code them. So here are a couple of examples from one of my other courses that I've been working on. And right here we have the cheat sheet, which has a list of the key principles. And then these are different oversized printouts. And we literally go through and we identify the different factors. I'm going to show you how much you can actually extract from the persuasive strategies used in different technologies later on in this presentation. But this is one of the great exercises. Just to give you a sense of what it's like, I'm simply coding up a Facebook profile page can easily take an hour and a half. Looking at a website like Amazon, their product pages, easily, it's about the same amount of time. There's more persuasive strategies per square inch in some of these very successful and sophisticated sites than you can imagine. And it's not till you come with an effective coding tool and actual exercise where you can apply it that you'll start to see these patterns. So moving on to slide 10, let me introduce you to myself. So this is my Facebook profile, and as you can see, I've marked it up, and in the background, we have a lot of the persuasive design strategies that Facebook is using. But this slide is to introduce myself. So this curriculum, it reflects a number of things that I'm bringing to the course. So I've been working hands-on with digital technology and behavior change for well over a decade. In 97, I ran my first social marketing campaign, and I started using the internet in 98 to promote social marketing. And this course follows a long career that I've had running online campaigns for the United Nations and working to evaluate some of the world's largest campaigns and online campaigns. My work as a scientist, looking at the design of health behavior change technologies. In my company, UltraSpark, I develop these technologies, and I am teaching courses on the subject. Sorry, we can't see this, but on slide 11, this is the teaching style. This is how the class is going to work. So I have a lot of content, and we're going to have a number of formal lectures. I've tried to break them up into bite-sized modules so that they're easily accessible. They're not too overwhelming. Again, I've taken a lot of the science, and I've simplified it as much as possible. If anyone wants to get into the details of the science, that's not a problem, although for this course, I have taken a lot of it out. It's going to be highly participatory, so we're going to have a lot of discussion. There's going to be class discussions and also class exercises. I've got a number of individual and pair exercises, so we'll work through the workbooks on our own, and then share examples with peer, and it's through this hands-on workbook learning that I think a lot of these principles will come very quickly. Now, moving on to slide 12. So, this is one of the goals that I had with this course, to take a number of years of research and practice and make it accessible. Now, I suffer a little bit as an academic, so I would say that my most important research in the field was for the journal Medical Internet Research, where after 2 years I was able to, you know, put out a list of persuasive design ingredients and show exactly how well they work. I used statistical meta-analysis. And what I soon discovered after publishing is that my knowledge and my learning was locked up, that my content was not accessible, that to even understand what I had written would require about 3 years of statistical training just to read my paper. And so I set the goal of figuring out how I could make all this scientific knowledge accessible. And so knowledge translation was my goal, to take all this knowledge that I knew was very valuable for for the public sector and make it easy to understand and easy to apply. So that's how I'll start at slide 13. So we now have a half hour left, and we're going to go through the entire course. And what I've done is I've broken up the course into a little house model. So if this course was a house, this is what it would look like. And day one, we're going to be learning the first three pillars. And on day two, we're going to be learning the last three, and with an outro. So on day one, we're going to start with the foundation of change and persuasion. Now, this is not change and persuasion for health. This is change and persuasion in general, just talking about what it is. It's a part of life and just how long it has been around. And in fact, it's been with humanity for thousands of years, and it's something we deal with every day. It's just part of being human. It's how we interact. And this will set the basis for the rest of the course. After that, we're going to look at the persuasive communication model and its three principles. And these three principles will give you a new paradigm on what's going on with interactive technology and persuasive design. After we look at these three pillars, we're going to look at the persuasive communication model and the eight domains of persuasive design. So I've taken all persuasion literature used from the health sciences and a number of other fields, broken them down the individual components, and reorganize them within a communications framework. And so this then sets a foundation for us to design either persuasive technologies for health behavior change or persuasive campaigns. So we're going to go through these eight domains, which I'm going to explain shortly. This is the main content. And what we have on the side are ingredients. So I look at this work like cooking. So through the afternoon of the first day, and then the morning of the second day, we're going to go on a big cooking class where I'm going to teach you a lot of ingredients of persuasive design. Now, afterward, you all have gone through the ingredients. You're going to have a good understanding what these principles of change and influence are, and you're going to be able to recognize them, and you're going to be able to pull them out. But now, after ingredients, it's time for our cooking class. And so that's where we learn how to build recipes. So that's how we combine all these ingredients into useful recipes. And here are a couple that I put up. So I talk about gamification. What are the ingredients of a gamification design? We'll look at e-coaching, motivational design. I don't know why, but I feel like Rogers has been somehow left out of the digital revolution. But we have to talk about social diffusion design, designing for social diffusion. And then afterwards, we're going to look at how you actually roll these out, so designing engaging technologies with iterative design. So this is when you have an actual project, you know, what are the steps you're going to follow. Now, during both of these, we're going to be doing a lot of hands-on exercises, and we're going to be working a bit more independently at this point. Earlier on, we're going to be doing more individual exercises and a couple of group exercises. So that's the overview. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through each of these. We're going to go through all the modules very quickly, and I'm going to show you exactly what is going to be contained in each of these areas. So in the first part, we're looking at change and persuasion, which is just a part of life. We're going to talk about, you know, how does it work? We're going to look at persuasion as it is a part of life, like the EU, and we're influencing our neighbors, they're influencing us, politicians, people we work with, our friends, our family. One of the books that inspired me to go down the track of using social marketing and the internet was a Canadian researcher, Dr. Mackenzie Moore. And in his book on community-based social marketing, I can never forget this, but he was saying that the most effective persuader he knew was his daughter, who constantly found a way to get what she wanted. So what we do in the health sciences, you'll also probably find to some degree in your own home and in your social. I could probably write a book on this subject, but we're going to do a brief history of persuasive communications from ancient Greece to the modern day, and we're going to do it in 5 minutes. So in fact, you're going to find that a lot of the research on persuasive design and persuasive technology actually starts here in the 4th century before Christ. And in fact, ancient rhetorical frameworks are still being used, and there's a whole area of science founded on this. So the point of this module is just to understand change and persuasion in general. Doesn't matter what you apply it to, and that's the point. So based on that, we're going to start now moving into the science of persuasion and change and try and look at, you know, what do we know and what are like reasonable measures of change. So here's a synthesis research that was looking at the effect of public health campaigns, and they came up with a ballpark figure saying that, you know, roughly, you know, a social marketing campaign, if 50% of the population is doing the good thing you want after your campaign, 55% doing that. And of course, it varies from topic to topic, and obviously they don't include things like quality of campaigns. So these are synthesis trends. We're going to look at more transactional things, like, and easy behaviors, like, you know, what are percentages of email open rates? And here is probably one of the more disappointing but more realistic things that we really have to understand, and that online health behavior change interventions, they require a lot of work. It's not going to be easy. And time and time again, you constantly see massive attrition rates for these technologies. And so this is a chart from one of Gunther Eisenbach's articles on the law of attrition, where he had consolidated different attrition curves from different health behavior change interventions. And we see that they all follow similar patterns. People start off engaged and motivated to fall off. But what also happens is those who stay generally do tend to get the benefits. So those who stick with programs tend to gain the benefits of them. So moving on to slide 16, we're going to look at a couple of the major behavior change theories and look at how they apply to changing people, communities, markets, and entire societies. And if we start with some of our old frameworks from ancient Athens, we find that in neural web design, they apply almost the exact same categories. So a couple of things have not changed too much in 2,000 years, but a few other things have advanced. We'll look at some of the major theories on, you know, relations between beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors, or is that behaviors, attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors, beliefs, attitudes, or attitudes, behaviors, beliefs. You know, normally things don't work in a linear fashion, and there are different models. We're going to be going through these theories within the ecological model of change. And so here we have one at the intrapersonal, but then when we go into, like, policy change at the broad end of the spectrum, we have a simple framework which also contains the key elements of motivational design, only targeting institutions and government. We'll talk a little bit about processes of change. And, okay, I do apologize for... I've taken Prochaska's work, and I changed some of the titles because I do also teach this content to people outside of the health field, and they get confused by concepts such as pre-contemplation and contemplation. So anyway, we are going to look at Prochaska's work on processes of change and talk about, you know, how this applies to campaign design and intervention design. And for a lot of the online health behavior change technologies that are process-oriented, they almost all follow Prochaska's stages of change model. And what's also interesting is you have different technologies that take place at different points in the pipeline. So, There's a type of online health behavior change technology. It's often called a screener. And it only sits on this end of the stages of change spectrum. It doesn't even attempt to help people make change. That's not its purpose. However, the longer-term processes, they're more about here. And then we can also talk about relapse algorithms and ways of automatically trying to engage people who fall off the bandwagon. Okay, let's go to 18. This is going to be a very quick module. We're going to basically say, why does interactive technology matter? And here are two very good reasons. You can't see this, but this is the growth of ICT, internet, mobile penetration around the world. And it hasn't stopped growing. And we can also look at some of the persuasive factors of people versus technology. Now, I think people will always be more effective than technology for trying to persuade people to change their health behaviors, to make lifestyle changes, to adopt new habits. But there are points where technology has advantages over people. And we can also look at hybrid models. Now, after those modules, what we're going to do is we're going to start learning the persuasive communication model. And within this model, I've taken one of the main ingredients of persuasive design and organize them within a communication model, which includes the source. So that's going to be you. And this is your audience or your user. This is the person you're trying to engage. And what we're going to do is learn how to maximize impact at every step in this process. And we're going to learn what you can and cannot do depending on what you have designed, what persuasive design science you can bring in, and which ones you can't. So just to quickly walk you through this model, a model says that, let's say this is you, but you're an app. You're your health agency, and you have an app to help people try and get them to walk, you know, a little more during the day. You're going to have message, so this will be the content, and it's going to exist in the media, which is your app. You're going to have to express it, so this is how you package and design it. Person has to understand it. They provide feedback, and based on that feedback, there are all sorts of things you can do. If you don't have feedback, there are a huge amount of things that you cannot do, a huge amount of very, very important engagement strategies that you will have no capacity to employ if you do not have this. And we're going to explain how that works. And then we have to remember that all this is happening within a social and physical context, which also comes into play. So we're going to go through something called the media equation. We're going to look at how people interact with technology. I'm going to go a little faster through these slides. I'm going to show you that within the communication framework, there are active ingredients that matter. And from evidence-based behavioral medicine, they use an allegory, saying that designing health behavior change technologies or health behavior change campaigns or any sort of intervention is like designing a drug, where there's active ingredients and there's a dosage. Now, for my two-year study on the design of these technologies, after 2 years, I think my most important slide was this. And what this is a list of tactics that actually help people achieve behavioral outcomes. And so this is a Cohen's D. So this is, you can think of this effect size as how impactful was a technology at changing someone's behavior. And Cohen's D is a little bit like it's a common currency of statistics. So you could take all sorts of branches of statistics and convert them all into Cohen's D, and then you know, oh, okay, so this analysis of variance and, you know, this t-test and this other statistical method, they all, we know what they all mean, even though they're formerly separate metrics. And so with this method, I was able to find out that, you know, knowledge, behavioral intentions, social influence, surprisingly, was huge. And these are all active ingredients. So we're going to talk about this methodology. Now, what I've done is I've already extracted all these active ingredients. I know what they are. And so we can now and go directly to websites and start coding them up and say, which active ingredients are there? And here's an example from Amazon. I'm telling you, Amazon has a lot of active ingredients. I don't see as many health behavior change technologies that are as heavily laced with persuasive design as some of the big commercial sites. But we're going to get a sense of that. And the next major principle will be that in communications theory, we can use it to model how people will interact with technology and communicate with technology. And based on that, we can also model humanized interaction.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Can I ask you, send a question to you quickly before
yes.
we move on? A question from a participant. Let me just page up here. How much focus will be on message expression and how to design persuasive applications?
Yeah, so that will come through a number of the modules on the ingredients. So we're going to look at a lot on how you craft your message and what are the key factors of message, and then how you style it. So that will be in the expression. And there, it only one module, so it will probably be an hour just on the expression alone. And then we're going to be working hands-on the second day, so we'll be working through templates. So I think there should be a fair amount. And also, if anyone has a particular project in mind, this is a great opportunity to vet it out and do your thinking on it. So if you have an idea, bring it along, and then we can just focus on it and craft all your messages and actually hopefully walk away with, you know, the actual messages and forms of expressing them that you might want to start for your first pilot. Great. And so here with communication, I'll show you that when you have, like, user feedback, you can do things with your output, with the way you engage them, that you couldn't do with regular point-and-shoot messaging. If you have no feedback, you can only give a generic message. If you have a bit of information about a person, you might be able to do targeting. So it's more like demographic variables. You know who they are, their name, superficial things. You can personalize it. But if you really know about how they think and feel, what they value, and their preferences, now you can start tailoring. And that's where things get very powerful. And this is something we haven't yet achieved with technology, but a full interpersonal relationship. We're not yet there. We're going to be using content analysis. So you're going to be coding up actual sites and identifying the different ingredients in them. And sorry, these are not from health. I'm going to have a number of nice health interventions coded up for the training course. And in fact, I'm sort of waiting because I'm running a few of them by one of the owners of one of the big health technology companies in the city.
Hi, Brian. It's Tanya again from York. I have another question.
Yeah.
Someone is wondering, is the main focus on marketing of persuasive technology and health promotion?
It's going to be more on the design of either technologies or campaigns. So it'll be on the active ingredients and theories that are used for either building a technology or a campaign.
But Brian, it's Tanya again. Doesn't that also actually feed quite nicely into the marketing strategies that may be put together?
Oh, do you mean like social marketing? So like marketing for health behavior change?
I would think so. Sort of standard marketing strategies or social. I think social would be lumped into those because we all use social marketing strategies now.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of social in there. And actually, a lot of this research started with social marketing. The problem is I rejected it as a framework. But the emphasis is on, like, campaigns and the technology. Does that answer the question?
I'm going to invite the person who asked it to maybe unmute their phone and maybe see if they want to comment. Oh, yes, it does. Thanks. They just sent it through.
Okay, great. Okay, and then at the next point in the course, we're going to actually walk through each of these elements in detail. Now, we only have about 10 minutes, so I'm going to walk through this entire model very fast. So we're going to actually start with the audience. So we're going to be looking at decision making. So we have something, you know, decision balance and how we make decisions. A main part of then the source message will be on what are the elements required, the minimum features required for a message that can work. And so here are a number of the minimum. So a person has to be aware. They have to be motivated because we're playing on motivation. This is not mandatory. They have to have the capacity, so they have to have the ability, the efficacy, the opportunity. Trust is often left out of the equation, but they have to trust not just you, but the path that you're proposing. You have to make a proposition, and I like to keep this in the mix because no researchers can tell you everything that matters. And in fact, you always have to market test and try and fail and then succeed before you get things right. But there are other factors. We'll never know what all of them are. But these are all make or break factors. And assuming they all work out, you can get to the desired outcome. But in any of these areas, any failure can undermine the whole effort. And we're going to look at these in detail. And for instance, we'll give you a description of trust that might not fit your normal understanding, but will help you very much in building campaign messages that people believe will lead to the results you're promising. We're going to look at the different media. So your choice of media determines how you can express your messages. So we'll look at a number of different media and options. And I love this website, Totally ABD, which uses video as the media of choice for their target audience. And they use comedians as a very great way to make it engaging. Okay, so for the earlier question on message expression, sorry, that's in here. We're going to look at message expression. So this is the area where how you say something is more important than what you say, where style trumps substance, where we can use graphic design, information architecture, all sorts of rules of framing to make things stand out, to pull and push someone's eyes to a website, to try and draw attention to this and that, to make things easy or complex. There are tons of things we can do to influence the effectiveness that have nothing to do with what we're saying, just how we're saying it. And that's what this module is about. Okay, then we're back to source. So we're going to look at source credibility. I'm going to show you just how important a picture is. You will not believe how a picture can shape our entire perception of whether we should believe something or not. What's a discussion on credibility without the elaboration likelihood model? So we'll have a quick discussion on that and show you great ways of taking advantage of credibility. And also, I have some very funny examples from the 1950s of how tobacco companies abused credibility in ways you cannot imagine. Trust me, I'm a tobacco company. Now, if anyone is into Fitbits and technologies and trying to figure out ways of using some of the more interesting devices to design health behavior change campaigns, this is when things really get interesting. So what I discovered during my research is I extracted those principles of influence that only can be used when there's a two-way communication cycle. And right here we have that part of it where you capture the data. So this is where you get information. So, you know, in traditional marketing, you would get information through market research. You know, you go, you ask people, you learn something. But online, you're more likely to use forms. So you have people commit complete surveys, questionnaires. But what's more interesting are some of the automatic capture technologies. So different sensors, accelerometers, GPS devices. Now, when we have this data, we can do a number of interesting things. And so this is the audience feedback domain in here. So we have a ton of things that we can do in here that we couldn't otherwise do. And I've just highlighted a couple of the modules, like awareness and memory. We can do targeted, personalized, and tailored feedback. We can do reinforcement. We can do punishment and stick. We can't do these without feedback because we wouldn't know if someone had completed their goal or not. We can also use things that are not listed on this page, such as Cairo, so knowing when you have to engage someone. You can build relationships with people when you have feedback. You can use techniques like reciprocity and sequential giving techniques or sequential requesting techniques. A person can express their self-identity when there's a two-way feedback cycle, and they can become more engaged. They can set goals. They can make personal action plans. They can remove barriers. They can provide. You can provide feedback on their performance, and you can't do any of this without the feedback.
Hi, Brian. Hi, everyone. It's Tanya again from York University. We're almost at 1 o'clock. I'm cognizant of everyone's time. Brian, how many more slides do you have to go through?
I can go very quick because we're pretty, I think, just a couple. I'll do the bridge. And I'll just say, finally, the last module in this area is on the social and physical context. And this is where social psychology meets social media. And where we bring in a lot of the large-scale social theories and examples on how to take advantage of them. I'll just go very quickly. We're going to talk about recipes, so we'll look at like gamification design, motivational design. These are examples. This is like the checklist, and we're going to be doing some more coding. These are some of the slides from the module on how you actually design and roll out these technologies. We're going to be doing some modeling, doing wireframing. And here we go. This is it. So afterwards, we'll just talk about implementing and further learning. And that's the course in a nutshell.
Does anyone have any questions they'd like to share either on the phone or via the chat line? Brian, you mentioned a book earlier. When we're done, could you mention the author again? And
which book was that?
As he's thinking.
Give me a reference in the chat box, and then I'll find it.
Okay. Whoever sent that note, maybe send me your email, and we'll make sure that gets to you. Oh, Moore, something by the name.
Oh, Moore. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll send that out.
Yeah. And Brian said he will send that out. And then someone asked about the persuasive technology cheat sheet. I think that's something we offer as part of the course.
Yeah.
Well, there it
is. That will be in the course. Will be the cheat sheet, but also with descriptions of each of the items as well.
Right, right. We send that out as part of the two-day course. And then, oh, yes, someone from Brant County has said it's Dr. Mackenzie Moore. Yes, thank you. The slides themselves, what I've asked Brian to do is put together a summary. He won't send out the identical slides, but at least a summary of what was discussed today. And we will have a recording, which I'm going to make sure the link is on the website. And someone has asked, will the courses be available after the conference via video or audio files? Probably not. The 2-day course itself won't be recorded. You'd have to attend. But certainly the webinar right now that has just happened on everyone. Okay, and get a copy of the slides. Their notes are a bit scrambled. Yes, just to repeat, we're going to send the link of this recorded webinar today out to everyone. Does anyone have any more questions? Have any of these techniques been used internally to an organization to influence practitioner clinician behavior?
Well, this is evidence based. So this is all based on already proven methods and principles. So the only difference is that they have been revised and packaged in an easily accessible format.
So you could use them internally. for group teams or departments for behavior?
Absolutely, yeah. Nothing new. There are no new principles. These are all principles that you'll find in the health sciences. So these come from evidence-based behavioral medicine, work by B.J. Fogg, work by a number of the leading authors, the major theories of change from Asia and Rogers.
Hmm. I think even – sorry, Brian, I interrupted
you. Yeah, so – But what the course does is it packages them in a format where it's easy to learn them, easy to apply, and yes, I use these, of course, for my own work and my own consulting with clients, and I also was able to actually audit a website once I had these tools in hand, and before I had these tools, I was not able to do it. So, I did publish in one of the top scientific journals in the e-health field with these tools, so I can attest they do work.
Okay. We're at 1 o'clock. Does anyone else have any other questions? Okay. Could this knowledge be applied to software plans?
Absolutely.
Or is it just website design?
No, there's two things. So the communication model that we're using, it describes two things. One is communication, but the other is interactivity.
So does that mean software plans, Brian?
Yeah, for software. In fact, you couldn't build a health behavior change technology without knowing about health behavior change science. You'd be making sort of possibly random guesses. This will absolutely put down some of the main frameworks that are required, at least as a conceptual and strategic level. And then when it comes to implementing them, then the system will provide, a number of guidance points on what matters and what does not matter. Obviously, if someone wants to design a technology without guidance from the sciences, they'll probably figure out what works, but they're just going to have to do a ton of testing. So I just think it makes a bit more sense to start with the sciences, and you're probably going to be 50% there. This system can't take you all the way because there is no system that will tell you what will work for all populations under all circumstances. But what the sciences can do is they can tell you these are the principles that have worked across many different fields, and you use that as your starting point. And then from that point, you can just go the rest of the way on your own with research and also use a system to help you try and get past problems when you're not really sure what to do next. Then it's a source of inspiration for, what are some strategies that maybe we didn't do that we can do? And that way, I think it's a great tool for software development.
Does anyone have any more questions? We are past 1, but certainly if you want to stay on the line and ask Brian a few more questions, we're still here. Here's another question. Is there do you cover processes for research of clients, audiences, or just let us know your findings?
Now, in the training, I do a basic introduction to content analysis because that's actually what the exercises are. So they're going through and marking up sites on paper. So you'll have like an introduction. I'm a huge fan of Nundorf's book on content analysis, but you're going to get the very abridged version. It won't be enough to do proper research, like if you want to do like full audits, because that's not the focus of this course. Although I do have another course I'm offering with York on using research methods for optimization. And in that course, that's where we'll go a little deeper into research. I would describe this course as the foundation for research because first you have to understand the coding tool and the principles. And then the next step is to, apply it to a research project.
I have another.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if it has that answered the question for that person. Brian, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's fine.
Okay. I have another question from someone. Is there a focus on universal design? Okay.
I don't know. I think there are some generic patterns that work. So I have been focusing on some of the more universal design patterns in a generic sense. So, for instance, if we go outside of the health field, like say a landing page, a landing page has a very common makeup, and you'll find almost every technique that Cialdini discusses, you'll almost find them all in every landing page. So that's quite a universal pattern. However, when it comes to, say, building an app to try and get someone to run a few more times a day, maybe make a commitment to, run every day for 10 minutes or to extend their current running, a little bit more. I don't know if there's like a universal pattern for that. There are tons of different models. But there are probably some key elements, and those we would look at. But again, I find I don't know if like these patterns have emerged yet in the field of health sciences, if there are universal design patterns like there are with landing pages. And so there, I'm not sure we have the universals, but I'll take a look at all the ingredients for some of the more common design patterns, but we're not yet there. Maybe in a few years, if there are universal patterns or combinations of ingredients that work, we'll be able to do that. But right now, it'll be more on what we can pull up.
Thanks, Brian. I hope that answered that question for the person who asked it. Does anyone else have any other questions? Brian, I have one myself, just in terms of taking this back and implementing it with your team. Is there a sharp learning curve? Is it something that can really easily be applied when you get back to the office, or will you still need a little bit of a learning curve?
Yeah, I think there's different ways in which the content and skills can be applied. So if you want to run out and, build a say something more modest, like a screener. This is a two-step model where a person puts into a website and then receives tailored content. You'll understand how that works. You'll know what the important elements are. But building it will require a project. If there's a long-term process-oriented technology, this is going to take a little bit. This would be even a much larger project. So actually building these technologies can be quite large. If you want to take a look at what you're already doing and improve it, then I think you can apply this right away. You'll have a good sense of what matters and what does not matter. You'll be able to audit your existing, technologies, figure out, where can we make quick improvements. So I think in terms of fast game, that's one instant application. If you're doing any procurement or looking into these technologies or, wanting to move in this direction within your organization, now you're going to have a reality check on what's possible and not possible. You're going to be able to tell good from bad in terms of, different contractors and options. And you will also be able to tell the difference between something that is promising and something that's snake oil. So this will help you, not just in the direct design, but in the dealing with these technologies in general.
That's actually a very interesting piece, isn't it? I mean, just in terms of differentiating between what is most likely a good investment for the organization versus what you can pass on to help you make in that decision-making process. But it sounds like in the development piece that inserting it into your planning process may take a little bit. It's not like it's adding much additional time, but you still need to insert it. So you're still working through the mechanics of where it should be placed in your planning process. Do I have that wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's something that can fit into long-term processes and make sure that you make more better decisions along the way.
Right.
And avoid you know, some possible mistakes that you would otherwise walk down.
Right.
Just because this is an emerging field, we don't have all the answers, and the more that you can learn about it, the easier it will be to make good decisions to help the organization make them, you know, during the long term.
Okay. I have another question from someone. I am starting a new business focused on motivating people to be healthier and more active. Can this be applied to a new business plan, or would I need to do a sufficient amount of research first?
Well, this is a system that can be used for actual designing, like, interventions and programs. So, or provide a framework that can be used to look at what you're offering the clients, and then to look back and say, are there any things that I'm missing? Are there some of these techniques that, you know, we know work, but we're not using now? The model itself is generic. So a lot of these principles have been around for thousands of years, but this course focuses on technology. So unless it's brought back to technology, specifically, you know, you might be sitting in a class, you know, learning about how some big websites do things, where if you're working more face-to-face, then the content might not be as relevant, just because the examples are going to be all digital.
And in terms of resourcing, Brian, are there any additional resources that you need to be able to use the technology, or do you use the method?
No, it's just a matter of learning, but obviously you'll have to have capacity, you know, back at your shop. So.
Right.
So as long as you have people you can work with for implementation, then you should be fine, or if you're working directly, that's fine.
Okay.
Oh, and maybe just one thing. Interactive technology almost always requires developers. For campaigns, you know, you don't necessarily have to have that, because you can use social media and regular digital communication. But for any technology, you know, you need people who can program. So that is maybe, you know, one limit, that you can't take this course and then, you know, walk away and build the next amazing health app. But if you're an organization that's going to go through a procurement process, or who has the in-house capacity, then you will be equipped with a lot of the tools that you'll need to get through it faster.
Okay, we have another question. Although you won't be going over target audience research directly, could you give us some suggestions for methods, newsletters, books, or sites to view on our own time?
I normally personally, I do target audience research with every method I can draw from, because it's often very difficult. So, you know, these would just be like standard research methods, you know, whatever. Digital is great if you can get online data, if your target audience spends time there serving that. Maybe I could suggest some books. I'll just make a note of that.
Yeah. I even myself here at the university, we do a lot of surveying and just to tap into the marketplace itself, see what people are thinking, focus groups, talking to people through our network. So it's a mixed methods, you could say, but there's a variety of ways you can tap into what the people are thinking.
Yeah.
They behave.
Yeah, so many methods. And actually, I'm a huge fan of it's totally a low-quality method, but the mall intercept method. Just go out to them directly and have a systematic method that's not a bad trade-off between, you know, a reasonably... It's got enough quality, and it's quick and dirty. Normally for a target audience research, I don't like to spend too much time and money.
Right.
You want to go quick.
I do the same, actually, just targeting people that are already in the network, reaching out and asking them questions, and you'd be surprised the amount of feedback you get. Here's another question. Okay, we have someone. I will definitely send out the contact information, yes, for more specific questions direct about the course directed at either us here at Health Leadership and Learning or to Brian. I'll send that out right now to you on the chat line. And I'm putting in two email addresses. And our phone number is coming as well. And please feel free to reach out to us. Great. We're at 1:17 now. And does anyone have any additional questions for me or for Brian? Just giving it a few seconds, see if anything comes through, or please unmute. And okay. Then I think we'll sign off now. Thank you so much to everyone who is on the line. It was an overwhelming response today to this webinar, and I thank you so much for your patience as you rephoned us. And yes, we can send you information about Brian's other activities that he does through AlterSpark. And we will have another webinar, information webinar, to find out more about the course. If there are any other people in your organizations that you'd like to refer on, to have them listen in. The course itself, will it be run as a webinar? Well, that's a good question. Brian, we could work on that as something online. We haven't planned for that yet, but we could certainly be doing that in the future, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We certainly have all the technologies. It's not the technology necessarily I'm working on right now, using right now, but we could certainly do run the 2 days as an online course in the future. The one that's coming up in September is in class on campus in New York. But thank you again for your patience, and I hope to send you a link to today's recording and a summary of some sort of the slides that you saw today, probably not the exact content, but something. Great, thank you. I'm glad to hear that people had a good experience after the technical difficulties. Really appreciate your patience. Okay, thank you, everyone. We're signing off now. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.